Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, meteorologist Jason Goff joins us on the line to answer your weather questions. Formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany, Jason now runs a forecasting website, and it's a good one, jasonsweather.com. So if you have a question about our weather, it's been cold and damp for a long time, it seems, during the lockdown. If you have a question about the weather, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But our number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff and your weather calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. And before we begin, I want to thank the person who called in to let me know that, in fact, it is not Tuesday, April 29th. It's Wednesday, April 29th. And, you know, I'm like Ron Burgundy. You just put whatever in the script and I will read it. You could say, welcome to Vox Pop for Christmas Day, and I'm going to read it anyway. No, it's Wednesday if you're scoring at home. Hey, we're joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff. He is here to answer your weather questions. Formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany, Jason's forecasts have been on these airwaves. He now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. You got a question about the weather? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Jason Goff, how are you, sir?
Hey, Ray, it's nice to hear your voice. Sorry that I'm not there in studio. Two quick things. One, you get a complete pass on getting the day of the week wrong, because that's a challenge for everybody, whether you're going into work or not. The days are all running together, as we all well know. And number two, I don't have my WAMC coffee here. That might be a problem.
Oh, boy, you don't have any coffee at all?
No, I can make my own, but the WAMC coffee is just the goods. I don't know what it is, what you guys do there, but I always look forward to that as a nice little perk to being on Vox Pop. So,
can I just tell you, you're the first person who ever said that.
Well, it is good stuff.
All right, man.
You know, you can bring me a bottle of scotch instead, and then we'll call it even. What do you think?
Done. Add a straw. You got it. You know, it's funny. I saw you in the grocery store a couple of weeks ago. I was, you know, at the Price Chopper, and I'm on checkout, and I got the mask on, and I got the gloves on, and I'm grumbling to myself and to the checkout guy about how I don't like it. And all of a sudden, somebody in the next checkout aisle is looking at me, and I said, well, what is this guy's problem? And he's got a mask on. I don't know who it is. He keeps looking at me, and turned out it was Jason Goff. It was the first time you'd been out in a while, huh?
Well, it was the first time that I had been out with a mask on. I had a makeshift bandana mask,
yeah.
And now I have two masks. One my aunt made me, and another one is it's kind of like a Hawaiian shirt. It's awesome. So what gave it away for you was your hat, because it was Maine. And I know that you and your family go to Maine every summer, so
yeah.
So that's got to be Ray Graff.
Yeah, and plus, you know, if you hear grumbling, it's generally me. Well, the number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. How's the website going?
The website is going great. It continues to pick up steam, which I'm really happy about. I've made it easier for people to sign up for, not that it was difficult before, but you really kind of get it front and center, an easier way to sign up for your daily forecast email. So that list continues to grow, and it's been great. I have been adding more content now as we get deeper into the spring, obviously waiting to see, you know, how things evolve here with respect to some of the regulations as we get into May and beyond. But there's now a golfing forecast on there, because golf courses have the option to open if they so choose.
Yeah.
So I've got a forecast on there for tee times, and I'm going to continue to add content that, you know, I mean, the whole premise of the site is to have relevant forecasts, like what is most important to you as, you know, you go about your day with your activities and whatever. So I'm trying to cover all of those bases. And certainly we have a lot of golfers in the area, so that's on there, and it replaced the ski forecast. So it's been rolling along, man. I'm enjoying it. I get up every morning and get a forecast together and get it sent out via email. And my pals at the Times Union also publish the forecast, so it's great.
It's jasonsweather.com. All right, let's talk about perception. You and I do this on every show, how, you know, we will perceive things, oh, gosh, this winter's not as bad as last winter. It seems to me, and I could be way off here, that this has been one cold and damp stretch we have been having.
It has been, and it as of, I have to update my tally, but as of yesterday, I think that's right, 16 of 28 days were below average for the month of April.
Wow.
And I threw some other stats in there, but believe it or not, we are not that far below average temperature-wise overall. It just, you know, it seems like it because we get these many stretches where the days, quite frankly, stink. And, you know, like Monday, for crying out loud, 46 degrees for a high, give me a break.
Yeah, right.
But we're just over a degree below average for the month. The interesting thing is that the warmest temperature of the month, we hit 66 in Albany today, and now with the cloud cover, we've pretty much capped those temperatures. But actually, two things related to that. One, I was just looking at the numbers. I keep track of my hourly forecasts and things. We went from 40 to 65 from 7 a.m. to noon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty impressive. And, you know, it kind of related to what you're saying. It's, yes, it's been a chilly month, but when we can manage the sun angle is up there, it's able to jack our temperatures up as it did. So we were 65 at noon. High today was 66. So 67 was our high temperature this month. It happened twice. The warmest day of the year so far was back on March 9th of all times, 75. And if you say, hey, well, we hit 67 in April twice, that's not too bad. Well, we also did that in January. So what else you got? You know?
Yeah, no, I got you. Well, speaking of perception, and we'll handle this email and then we'll take a break. And if you want to call in, we'll get to the calls in a minute. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Stephen wrote in, and Stephen's a ninth grade earth science teacher. And his point is very similar to one that I've been thinking about, in that I look up at the sky and I swear to you that it's bluer. There's less jet traffic. It is the stars at night have been spectacular when it's clear. Stephen's question, due to less pollutants being put into the atmosphere, are we seeing any weather and or climate changes?
No, I mean, first of all, anything that goes on, and I'll preface this, Ray, because we also talk about this. This is more of a show about weather as
right.
opposed to climate, which is to say, as opposed to global warming, climate change. That's a whole different topic. We're just going to talk weather. But so that's a temporary thing with different emissions dropping. It's not going to have an effect on, you know, the climate change issue that we continue to be in.
Right.
This is just a tiny little blip. However, with that said, it's been great to see the bluer skies. I mean, you'll notice it here and in spots, but when you see pictures, like I saw a picture from New Delhi in India, which was just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The difference.
You could see the Himalayas, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. And so, you know, that has been a decent byproduct of this, if you will. And I remember even after 9/11, there were some scientists that were really on the ball, you know, in the immediate wake of such a hideous day in American history. And once the flights were grounded, they decided to do air quality tests. And I can't remember how long the airspace was closed. It was 5 or 6 days. So during that time, they noticed almost immediate drops. And now with all of the flights that have been canceled and just are not even being scheduled at this point, that has been really good. Now, does it have an effect on our weather? No. The interesting thing, though, is that planes have weather instruments on board. You know, commercial airlines, cargo jets, they have these instruments on board, and then they relay those data to the agencies that process the models. So we're actually missing a little bit of data. We've not seen a big drop in terms of what we call, you know, the forecast accuracy, you could call it, in terms of how the models are doing. So it's not like it's a huge issue, but the more data, the better in terms of getting a more accurate forecast. So that's kind of a little twist on your question. But at the end of the day, the lack of normal air traffic, as it were, does not have an effect on our weather. But it is awfully nice to see, as you said, those clearer skies both day and night.
Our guest today is Jason Goff, and we talk weather today. And, you know, Jason is never afraid to talk about climate change, but this show is really about weather systems and weather questions. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we will be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff of jasonsweather.com. You may see his weather forecasts in the timesunion.com site and other places. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question about the weather, or you can email us, voxpopwamc.org. A couple of emails here, Jason. This one is from Joyce in South Fallsburg. I like to watch it when it rains or snows, but most of the time it happens at night. Is there an explanation for that? And that's from Joyce.
Well, Joyce emails me sometimes, so I remember, as soon as you said the town there, which is great, I would say to Joyce that is a more of a false perception, if you will. It's not that, you know, rain tends to happen more at night or you know, at any time of the day. Now, as we get into the summertime, when you can get storms that are really driven by the heat of the day, you tend to get more rain overall in the summer during the daytime. But we can also get storm systems that come through and bring some pretty steep energy not too far overhead, and that can bring us those nighttime thunderstorms that we get. And those are the suckers that got me into meteorology to begin with, because they used to scare the bejesus out of me. So I learned about weather through that. So that's kind of an interesting little side note there. Yeah. in terms of how I got into all of this. But it's not, you know, particularly any particular, you know, time of day, and we can get rain whenever, 24/7. In fact, we will have some pretty heavy rain coming in tomorrow, and it will fall at night, but that doesn't really have anything to do with anything other than the timing of the storm system itself.
Do the nighttime storms still scare the bejesus out of you?
No, not so much anymore, but it still will wake up but when you're a little kid lightning lights up your room and you have that thunder and, you know, it's 2:30 in the morning or whatever, and I just was not a fan.
Yep, no, I get you. And, you know, The real scare is when you see things in the news, as we've seen in the last couple of months, those nighttime tornadoes that go through.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst, because people, obviously you're asleep, you get woken up and you're not sure what's going on. And, you know, it is the biggest challenge for forecasters and the weather service and the media to try to get warnings out to people during that time. So, you know, if you know that there's a possibility of having severe weather overnight in parts of the country, especially that are a lot more prone than we are, it makes it more of a challenge. So you have to kind of get people geared up before they go to bed, and maybe they don't go to bed because they want to stay up and wait. And it's also kind of a free commercial, if you will, for the importance of weather radios. The NOAA weather radio is the best way to get warnings. It's better than a cell phone. It's better than anything, because it's not going to fail. As long as it has power, it's going to get that signal.
All right.
And so there are redundancies in place to make sure, that message gets across. So it's kind of a rude awakening, because you can have a pretty shrill siren to get you out of bed in a hurry, but it's better than the alternative. So
indeed,
that's just the way that rolls.
All right, one more email, and then we'll jump on the phones with Jason Goff. This one's from Sally. And Sally says, my friends and I are casual runners. We've been running together in Albany at lunchtime for many years. We all feel that the local wind has increased and become more incessant in the last few years. Is there any data compiled about this? Are we on to something, or is it our imagination?
I think it's more of a perception. you know, we tend to get pretty windy in the transitional seasons, especially in the spring. And, you know, certainly we can in the fall as well, but really in the springtime, you know, as the atmosphere is in a state of flux, transitioning from winter to summer. And so that's why, particularly in this pattern that we've been in, you know, we'll have a couple of decent days and then boom, the bottom falls out. We get a big trough coming down from the northwest, and it's been bringing in some of these cooler air days, like I said, 2 days ago with a high of 46.
Yeah.
So, and so when you get these transitions, you know, from one set of weather to the next within this pattern, that by nature is going to produce a lot of wind. You know, I mean, we've had some pretty windy days, but no more or less than any other given year.
We are joined today by our favorite meteorologist, Jason Goff of jasonsweather.com. Let's hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alex in Albany. Alex, you're up.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Hey, Alex.
Jason, I have another, hi, how are you? I have another thunderstorm question.
Okay.
I've noticed that when you get a cold front coming through and you get a line of thunderstorms along that, riding along that cold front, that more often than not, the line of thunderstorms is kind of at a steep angle from northeast to southwest, kind of almost like parallel to I-88. Why is that?
That's generally the way that storms or that cold fronts are oriented. You know, so if you were teaching a meteorology class, you would draw a cold front that would tend to drape from northeast to southwest and push its way through. That's not to say that, you know, you can get fronts from different directions. Warm fronts, for example, also will produce thunderstorms, and they tend to move in the opposite direction. They'll go from southwest to northeast. And then occasionally you can get, although they don't produce severe weather a whole lot in this part of the country, but you can get what's called a backdoor front, and that's a front that'll actually move in from east to west. And it's often a boundary between, you know, as fronts tend to be, between more stable and more unstable air. But especially if they're coming in from the east, the air is really stable because you tend to get that cooler influence of the Atlantic making its way. So in generally speaking, that's just kind of the way these cold fronts are oriented for us. And in other parts of the country, too, you'll see them on a typical, you know, map in any meteorology textbook. They're generally these little kind of gradual curves that tend to go from northeast to southwest. So that's just sort of the way that all works.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Alex. Satisfied customer. Let's go to Rita in New Marlboro. Rita.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Hi. I lived in Texas a few years ago, and I had read when I was there that the northeast was going to get wetter and damper, not necessarily colder, but just wetter, and just wondered what Jason's thoughts were.
Hmm.
Wetter like this year or at any time? What's
no, just in general because of the climate change, that the northeast would move toward, you know, more rain than snow.
Yes, that is true. That's not to say that we can't get whacked by a good storm, snowstorm. But generally, as you know, temperatures in the wintertime tend to rise as they have been, it just is going to lead to less snow. Our snowfall numbers have been gradually dropping off in Albany. And that's in essence, you know, one of the things is that we've just had milder winters overall. The most amazing thing to me is that this year in Albany, we did not hit 0 degrees or lower. We were not below zero, I should say.
Yeah.
And that happened now. This is the fifth time that this has happened this century.
Wow.
So on an average, one every 4 years. Before that, it had only happened twice throughout the entire 20th century and the 19th century. Records go back to 1882. So from 1882 to the winter of 99-2000, we had 2 years where we did not have a below zero temperature.
Amazing.
And just in the last 20, we've had five.
Well, a couple of years ago, we had a stretch where we had some of the coldest weather I recall, and our pipes froze. It was not a lot of fun. I think it was February,
no doubt
maybe?
About it.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was February 15. That was brutal. And not only was it, that was the fourth coldest month on record. Now I'm going just off of memory, but it was the fourth coldest month on record, the second coldest February. But when you do the math, those records go back to 1820, I yeah. believe. And so you're talking about, you know, you just do the math, 12 months in a year times 200 years. And well, at the time it wasn't quite 200 years. And so, you know, when you're talking a list of whatever the number is, 1,040 or whatever, your number four on that list, that yeah. is getting it done.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest today on Vox Pop. Ian, who is in the car. Ian, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I work on a golf course. How are you, Jason?
Good, thank
you. I work on a golf course, and there's a phenomenon that happens in the spring and the fall, and we all know that dew freezes at 32. But when we're working, the temperature, if it's just below 40, if it's 40 or below, we will get a frost in the morning set in, even though it's not 32. And I'm wondering if the sun, as it's rising, does it compress the air and make something happen that makes that frost occur? Because, I mean, literally, you'll be out there working and it'll be fine, and then you can just watch. You can just watch the frost set in around you, and it's like you're in an island surrounded by frost. So I was wondering if you had heard anything, you know, compression frost or some sort of term like that.
Well, no. What you have going on there is, and it's not to say that you have to get frost when it's 32, when the temperature reaches 32 degrees. Oftentimes, I mean, official temperatures are recorded and reported from thermometers that have very specific specs. So they've got to be over grass. They have to be encased in a white ventilated housing 6 feet off the ground. And the reason that it's white is because you want the white to reflect the sunlight. If it were a darker color, it would absorb sun and would give you a false reading. So that's just at 6 feet. But cold air can be sneaky, and it's really dense. And especially around here, a lot of our golf courses, I was out at Capitol Hills this morning with my dog. And, you know, it's amazing that you have so many just subtle elevational changes on, you know, even on the same hole. And that colder air is just going to drain down because it's heavier. It's more dense than any other. So it's going to settle in spots. So you're going to see frost that would develop, you know, on a cold, clear, calm night morning. You're going to see those in generally in the lowest spots on the course, and as opposed to yep. being up on top of the hill. And so that's what that is. If you had a thermometer, or shoot, even if you stood on that little, we'll call it a puddle of frost, and you held your hand out, you know, over your head, or just even straight out if you're 6 feet tall or whatever, you would get a temperature reading. And then if you were to put that thermometer down on the ground, it would be, you know, if you said 40 degrees, it's going to be a good 7-8 degrees colder in those spots, and then you're going to hit that magic number and do it. So that's really what it is. It's just these little pockets of colder air that, you know, air is a fluid like water, so it's going to flow and drain and do all of that. And the colder the air, the right. you know, the denser it's going to be, and that's what you're going to get.
Ian, thank you very much for the call. Jason Goff is our guest, and the number is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Ed in Ackard. Ed, you're on.
Well, hi. Yeah, I really enjoy listening to the weather, no matter what's on the media. You know, they may or may not tell you the truth, but the weather almost always tells you the truth. They might make an honest mistake, but they'll tell you the truth generally.
Agreed.
And my
yes.
Pet peeve, and I almost feel embarrassed to have a pet peeve like this in these terrible times of Trumpism and Corona.
Go
and all
for
that.
It, man.
But when they give the the amount of daylight each day, the guy that does the weekend weather reports will tell you 2 minutes and 31 seconds more than yesterday or whatever. But the people that do the weekday will always say 2 minutes more, and you know, it averages out, and they're rounding, obviously. But that, you know, people that don't know how this works might actually think that the daylight is like not increasing on a smooth curve or decreasing as the case may be. So I would love to hear the weekday weather people tell you to the second how much of an increase or decrease there is in daylight.
You make a great point, Ed. Why can't you just give the exact information? Why the rounding? You probably have a good answer for this, Jason.
I don't know. I mean, it's just as easy. It's just as easy to figure out. It's just as easy to get that information. You can go to. There's a website that you could actually link to it on mine, on jasonsweather.com. You can go in the sunrise sunset tables. It's really well laid out, and it'll give you the amount of daylight each day and the change, and it is down to the second. Whereas on the National Weather Service puts out a daily climate summary, as they call it, which is basically the high and low in the day and what kind of weather we had, how much rain, snow, whatever. So it'll put that out there, and then it'll have the sunrise and sunset times, but they are rounded to the minute. So I think anybody that's doing that, they're just looking perhaps off of that as opposed to going to a more specific site to tell you precisely, 2 minutes and 14 seconds or 2 minutes and 46 seconds or whatever it is. So that's all. It's just,
Is it being lazy?
It's just that I'm a weather fanatic. That's why I care. Probably
no, I
most
it.
People don't.
Yeah, well, no, I understand. I think it could be.
A little laziness.
Wanted to do it. Yeah. But I suppose consultants would argue that it's too detailed and people don't want to do it. But look, consultants are not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
I know how you feel about the consultants. Yes, that's a good point. Hey, Ed, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Maybe someday, Jason, you come on. We'll do a whole hour about consultants and focus groups. What do you think?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
All right.
You want to hear somebody rant?
Yeah. All right. Well,
I will be more than happy to.
Oh, well, we'll have Jackie, our producer, make a note. Frank is in West Sand Lake. Frank, you're up.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
All right, sir.
Okay. I'm one of those junkies that I like to follow on the internet tropical storms and cyclones. And you've probably been following the recent depression in the Eastern Pacific Ocean. And they remarked that was the earliest ever that a depression, let alone tropical storm, had formed there. And I guess May 15th is the usual date that that season opens in the Eastern Pacific. And I was wondering if you were surprised about that, or could we expect more, or I don't know.
Well, it's and to be honest, I don't know what the water temperature anomalies are in the Eastern Pacific right now. I would guess that maybe they're a little higher than average, but I don't know that. But I know within the context, the Gulf of Mexico and the Florida coast, the Atlantic coast, that is, the water temperatures are really well above average. And so they're forecasting forecasts are starting to come out now. The first one comes out on April 1st, and then they'll be updated for the Atlantic hurricane season. And they're predicting a really active season, which is the last thing that this country needs, but we'll have to deal with that most likely as well. So to answer your question, am I surprised? No, it's not unheard of, certainly, to get storms outside of the typical seasons. The Pacific hurricane season is longer and more active than the Atlantic season is, generally speaking. Although, some of the storms that we've had in the last few years have rivaled some of these monsters that'll roll through, Southeast Asia and things like that.
Tonga.
It's a function of the atmospheric conditions coming together, because it's not easy to create a tropical storm. You've got to have everything kind of line up in the right orientation, and everything's got to kind of set up together. And one of the things that you need is warm water. So I'll have to take a look and see what the Pacific temperatures are. That's a little out of our jurisdiction, but I can check it out.
Well, Frank,
now I'm curious about it.
Frank, thanks a lot for the call. Now, when does the Atlantic hurricane season begin?
June 1st. So the Pacific starts 2 weeks earlier, and then it runs through the summer into the fall. But the Atlantic season starts on June 1st. And, we've had tropical systems, every month of the year. It's obviously, it doesn't happen nearly that often just because of the water temperatures. And oftentimes, too, you have the atmosphere is pretty chaotic, so you can't get a storm to be left alone, if you will, by the atmosphere. If you've got a lot of wind shear to kind of shears the tops of these storms off, they can't develop.
Right.
So that's difficult to do in the springtime because, as we were saying, you know, the things, the atmosphere is pretty jazzed up. You got subtropical jet, you got a polar jet, and everything's going every which way.
Jason Goff is our guest. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our number. Always great when we have Jason Goff on these airwaves. Jason's website is jasonsweather.com. And three or four emails here, Jason, and then we'll hit the home stretch on the, I hate to say home stretch to a guy who goes to the track as much as you do. And it may not happen this year, man. I don't know. We'll find out.
No, I was listening to Tim Wilkin from the Times Union. He had a Facebook Live today, and he was first to say he really doesn't know, and it's just everybody's got to wait and see. But he certainly didn't sound terribly optimistic about the way things are shaking out.
Well, hopefully at some point in our lifetime, things will get back to a semblance of normal. This one is from Alex in St. Johnsville. Alex writes, "My four-year-old son has recently taken up an interest in tornadoes. I don't have a specific question, but I wonder if you, Jason, may have any educational thoughts about tornadoes."
Oh, yes. There are some really good pages out there. I would start off with the Storm Prediction Center. So spc.noaa.gov is the place to go for that. There is also, I'm just looking up a couple of other things on here. SPC is a highly advanced part of NOAA in terms of its forecasting and all the research they do. But the informational pages that they have, now just looking at the research tab, gives some pretty good, basic understanding of tornadoes and other types of severe weather. But you could also just do a search. There's another service out there through the National Weather Service called Jetstream.
Yeah.
So you can go to that. That has all kinds of weather tutorials and things on there. And then University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, UIUC, has a really good brief but thorough list of types of lessons for weather as well. So those are three good resources. SPC, Jetstream through the National Weather Service, and UIUC. If you do a quick Google search and do UIUC tornadoes, I'm sure that page will pop up.
All right. This one is from Blecky. Blecky writes, "What data or observations were used to predict weather forecasts prior to the use of satellite and other advanced electronic data? I took a meteorology college elective in 1980, and I seem to remember weather forecasts were made based on cloud formations and other observable data." And that's from Blecky.
Yes, that, before satellites came about, because satellite technology continues to increase and the things that we can do with those to estimate wind speeds, for systems, let's say, that are out, we were just talking about hurricanes before. So if you have a system that is halfway between the United States and Africa, you're not going to send hurricane hunters that far because they don't have that fuel capacity. So you could get there and back. But when these hurricane hunters are in these storms for a good 8 hours or more, depending on what's going on, when they're trying to get measurements. So satellites can estimate wind speeds, they can estimate temperatures, they can do all kinds of things. So before satellites came on, particularly to be able to detect things other than just, hey, here are clouds or here there are not clouds, a lot of the forecasting relied on ships that were, anywhere out on the open water in the Gulf, along the Atlantic or whatever, and they would radio in, or they would Morse code in the data that they had, you know, taken every hour or whatever. So, and then you also have a series of weather stations around, but without satellites, we were really flying blind, and it made it a lot more difficult to forecast, because forecasting, the hole in forecasting overall, in terms of, like, you know, why were you off? Like today, I forecast a high of 64 and it ended up being 66. Not a big deal.
No.
But if you're forecasting a, you know, a day with a few spotty thunderstorms and you get a severe weather outbreak of some kind, generally that doesn't happen, but just kind of, you know, a hypothetical, the issue is that you have to make, and this is still true, whenever you're doing model forecasts, you have to make estimations because you don't have a series of data points. So you have to estimate, let's just say for the sake of argument, you know, what the temperature is in Clifton Park if you only had the temperature in Albany and Glens Falls.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a pretty long drive, right, from Albany to Glens Falls, a little under an hour or whatever. So, you know, you're talking about topography and, you know, you have to make an assumption or an educated guess as to what the temperature is. That may or may not be right. And so those are the data that are being fed into the models, and then it just falls back on the old computer adage, garbage in, garbage out.
Now, you have an interest in sort of historically accurate or inaccurate forecasts. And I know that, for instance, in school, you did a study about the Old Farmer's Almanac. Have you ever looked at pre-satellite, post-satellite, the overall accuracy of weather forecasts?
I have not, just because, I mean, not in any great depth, because it's just, you know, forecasting accuracy continues to improve. You know, it's always been about modeling and trying to figure out what the weather is going to be like through, you know, the use of mathematical models. But back then, as I said, we didn't have nearly the capacity of weather observations even. So even if we had, you know, the great computing speed and could do that, but if you don't have enough actual data to use, then there are going to be those holes in those forecasts. So the general consensus is, and not even a consensus, the truth is that forecasting skill has increased greatly, especially just in the last 20 years, and even in the last 10 years, it's really increased. But, you know, before that, the forecasts just weren't as good because we didn't have the knowledge, we didn't have the equipment to make better forecasts.
Jason Goff is our guest. Jason's website is jasonsweather.com. And one more email, and then we have to get it through as many calls as we can before the end of the program. This one's from Mark. Mark writes, there was a movie back in the 90s called The Perfect Storm. It was a true story about a once-in-a-lifetime storm. Do you remember where you were when that actually happened? And what is the likelihood of that happening again?
Well, it was called The Perfect Storm because three elements came together at just the right time. You had essentially a hurricane that was running out of juice down to the south, and then you had a big trough of low pressure and a cold front all coming through at the end of October. And so, you know, it's just, you look at probabilities when you're talking about that. What are the odds of all three of these things coming together at just the right time? Because timing is everything when you're trying to get these things juiced. And in essence, you know, this hurricane got a second wind, no pun intended, really,
right,
from the extra additional energy that it had. And the water was still, you know, even though it was at a higher latitude in late October, it was still warm enough, you know, in and around the Gulf Stream. That can have a big influence. So that thing just basically blew up. But it was more a function of the energy that it was fed to really kind of get that cranking. And the book, by the way, is, as is usually the case, is a lot better than the movie. The movie was okay, but the book was really, really good.
Can I complain about the movie for a minute, just for a second?
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I were sitting down on the couch a few nights ago, truthfully, and the kids were snug in their beds, and she said, oh, we're going to watch the Perfect Storm. I said, you've seen that before. She said, yeah, I know, I love it. I said, why would you watch a movie a second time when you know what's going to happen at the end? It's like watching the Titanic. You know they're going down. Why waste the 3 hours?
Well, I don't know. I've seen Star Wars a lot. I guess I'd have to side with your wife on that one.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Patricia in Gilderland. Patricia.
Yes, I'm 82 years old, And when I was young, the heat of the day, the hottest time of the day, used to be 2 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and now it seems to be 5. And I'd like to know why and if this is something you see.
Well, to be honest, it really depends on the time of year overall. Our warmest temperatures and, you know, in our warmest months tend to come later in the afternoon. Earlier in the year, you know, when you're into, let's say, February, March, it all has to do with the sun angle. As it gets higher in the sky, it heats things up more. And there's a lag between the highest part of the day, you know, the sun's being at its peak at in the day, what we call solar noon. There's a lag there between that and the higher temperature because the sun heats the ground first, and then the ground radiates that heat back up. So the sun doesn't heat the air directly. So it's just a function of time of year. It's not necessarily that the hottest day part of the day has changed over the years. It's just it changes month to month in essence. So, you know, our high temperature today came a little bit earlier than it otherwise would, and that's just because we kind of cut off the sun, so to speak, with now basically an overcast sky. But, you know, when you get into July and August, sometimes, you know, your high temperatures aren't going to come until 5:30, 6 o'clock, whereas, you know, this time of year they would tend to be a little bit earlier in the day, maybe 3:30 to 5-ish, something along those lines.
Patricia, thank you very much for the call. Jason Goff is our guest. Over to Northern New Jersey. George, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to ask the distinguish what between a hurricane, a typhoon, and a cyclone. And I know that typhoon and cyclone are usually spoken of in the Pacific and hurricanes in the Atlantic.
Okay.
Is there a distinction, Axel?
No, actually, you just answered your own question. Well done, because it really has to do with where the storm is as to how it's designated by that country's meteorological service. So, for example, in places like India and Bangladesh, they refer to it as a cyclone. Typhoons, you get down in the Indian Ocean and down to Australia, and hurricanes here, but they all are the same storm in essence, although they rotate the other way. In the southern hemisphere, they're still born of the same meteorological components. And a cyclone, by the way, is just a generic term for an area of low pressure. That's all it is. So you have a cyclone as low pressure. You have an anticyclone, which is high pressure. So what's going to be bringing us a whole bunch of rain here, at least a little bit farther downstate and down along the southern tier, that is going to be from a cyclone. It's just a storm system.
All right. Go ahead.
That's all. No, so that's all. That's all. That's just it just has to do with where in the world they are, and all low pressure systems, be them weak or be them major hurricanes, they're all meteorologically defined as cyclones.
All right. We have a few minutes left here with Jason Goff. Let's do a lightning round here and try to see how many we get through in the next 3.5 minutes. Kenny in Massachusetts. Kenny.
Hi, I fly radio control gliders, and we throw the plane up and we look for lift, and, you know, like a bird, and we have very long flights, and we catch it, we ride it downwind, come back and do it again. I fly year round, so I know there's lift in the wintertime as well. I haven't figured it out. Are there ways to predict which days will be more lifty and which days will be more sinky? Because
okay.
It's sometimes all the air is going up.
Good question.
And then some.
Yeah.
Okay,
that is a good question. I don't know of a specific. I mean, I'm sure it's out there, but I, you know, the research and the things that I do on a daily basis are just related more to what's going on the ground. And of course, you've got to look into the atmosphere to figure that out. But in terms of picking out where these levels are, you can do that. You would have to. The best way would be to learn how to read what's called a sounding. Which is the balloon that the Weather Service office sends up, and it'll give you an idea of temperatures throughout the atmosphere, what they are, what the wind speed and direction is as well. So I would recommend that as a start, certainly, and you would be able to get an idea of where your thermals might be that you can catch.
All right, Kenny, thanks a lot. Now over to Evan and all. Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd. Evan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it sounds like you're flying in a plane, but go very quickly.
I was driving.
Huh. All right, go ahead.
Well, my comment was Jason was talking about the temperature of the air when frost is formed. There's a phenomenon if you have dry air and the there's some evaporation of moisture on the ground, that frost can form at temperatures above 32 degrees because it's a refrigeration effect.
Yes, that is correct. So you do that in essence, because evaporation is a cooling process. The same concept as if, you know, you step out of the shower in wintertime, you're cold because the air is really dry, and that can certainly bring down temperatures enough to get frost in those little pockets. And you're right, you can have, if the air is dry, you can have air temperature of 35, 36 degrees and still get frost right down at the ground. And that's important getting into the growing season as we are now, too.
Well, Evan, congratulations. You win today's Golden Zach Award for irritating our engineer. Well done. Now we go over to Scott in Massachusetts. Scott, you have about 30 seconds.
Shoot. As a mariner, I was taught to watch the winds as they clock around, and when they clock around quickly is when a front is coming. I was curious if you could elaborate on that, and if there's enough time. Also, what is a straight line wind? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks a lot. Jason, you have about 30 seconds here. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so a straight line wind is generally, you know, the wind that we experience on a day-to-day basis, and it's just as opposed to a rotational wind. As far as the question he was saying about being a mariner, I was so focused on the second part. What was his first?
What is a straight line wind in 5 seconds?
Yep, that's all it is. So a straight line wind is what's basically pushing the air around, you know, at your front, at your side, whatever, as opposed to a rotational wind.
Jason Goff, you are fantastic, man. Next time I run into the Price Chopper, we won't almost come to blows. That was, it was a little sketchy there for a little bit. But, hey, your website is once again what?
Jasonsweather.com. Go and check it out. Let me know what you think. And anybody has any questions, or I don't know how many folks you had left on the line there, Ray, but anybody can reach out and email me, jason@jasonsweather.com. And, I hope everybody has a great day.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here. Support comes from the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And Clark and Green Architects in the Berkshires, practicing the art of design, striving to construct integrated buildings to conserve energy and support healthy environments for living and working. ClarkandGreen.com. Well, thanks again to the great Jason Goff for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your calls. And thanks to Zach Malloy, who was on a short string today. Thanks to Charlene Knight for answering the phones. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's gardening. We'll see you then.